This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's time to talk that talk, and we talk it like no one else. This is The Stinking Truth. Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey, welcome into the Stink Truth Podcast. Mark Schlereth alongside Mike Evans. Thank you so much for making us a part of your day. Thank you for subscribing. The numbers are growing. We appreciate it. Please share it with all your friends and family. We certainly appreciate you guys. Mike, how are you, buddy?
I'm great. And I'm even in a better mood because I saw something. You know, there's a myth out there. There's a legend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people claim it exists. Others don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I finally saw evidence of it. Mark Schlereth. Talking to himself.
Oh, walking through the hall.
You've shared with us a lot of times that you are somebody that will just talk to yourself in airports.
Yeah.
And people will be like, who are you talking to? Y'all, I'm just talking to myself. And as we're walking down here to do this podcast, I happen to be about 20 feet behind you, and I hear you talking. And I come around the corner. Yeah, and there's nobody there.
Yeah, I'm not talking to anybody. I'm talking to myself.
You're talking to yourself?
Yeah, you know, the other day.
It was
day,
like I finally saw, like, Bigfoot in the wild. It was awesome. Proof it exists.
You know, I was out working in the yard the other day, and I come in, and my wife is like, who are you talking to on the phone? I go, what do you mean? She goes, you were talking to on the phone to somebody. I go, no, it wasn't. I didn't talk to anybody on the phone. I go, well, who are you talking? Oh, I was talking to myself. Like, I'll ask myself questions. Right, I'll just ask myself a question, and then I'll answer the random question that I ask myself, and then I'll laugh.
You were awesome at that question. You slay me, Mark.
Right, yes. Oh, boy, you are so clever. So, yeah,
it was awesome.
I constantly walk around, and I'm like, I'll ask myself questions, then I'll just be kind of... I'm not talking loud, but I'm just kind of whispering.
Yeah, it was more of a whisper, which is kind of what got my attention at first. I was like, who's he whispering to?
Right, yeah.
And?
Yeah.
You were whispering
to yourself. No, you did.
Yeah,
you saw
it was awesome.
You
was
saw great. You saw
it exists.
Right, Bigfoot exists.
Yeah. He does. It like answers one of the great questions out there. You know, if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound?
All right.
Mark Schlereth, does he talk to himself? We got the answer.
Good.
Well, this is probably a conversation you could have with yourself, and that is, what's going on with Dallas and their refusal, stubbornness, reluctance to pay guys?
Isn't it interesting? And like, it's almost like we're going to push it all into the middle of the table for 1 year and see if we can actually win a championship. And if not, then we'll make decisions. Like, I don't necessarily understand it, because when you talk about guys like Dak, you talk about guys like CeeDee Lamb, you talk about guys like Micah Parsons. Like, I'm a big believer in identifying your guys and getting to them early, right? Sign them a year early before they have the opportunity to press you into free agency. So if you identify a guy and you know the guy is a really good player, then sign the dude. And if you have to set the market, so be it.
Better than chasing the market, right?
It's better than chasing the market. So the bottom line is, if I come to Micah Parsons and signed him this offseason, said, hey, man, let's work this deal out, you're going to make him probably one of, if not the highest paid player. But you know what's going to happen? 2 months from now, he'll get usurped by somebody. And then next year, he'll get, you know, somebody else will jump up over the top of him. And then all of a sudden, he's no longer overpaid. He's a bargain. And so if you identify your guys, then damn it, pay your guys. Make sure you take care of. And then in the locker room, here's the other thing. In the locker room, you know what's the most respected? Guys who come in and earn it. Whether you're, you know, a late round guy like me and you earn the respect of the players and you get paid, you know what happens? Guys are excited for you. Or if you're a big-time player like Parsons, where was he drafted? 11 overall? And then you almost exceed the expectations? Guys are excited for you. You're homegrown. You're one of us. You got drafted here. You proved, you know, the odds wrong. And you become one of the best players in football. And the team rewards you for it. Everybody in the locker room's excited. But when the team shuffles their feet, when the team doesn't want to get you signed, when the team wants to complain about things, then the upstairs becomes the enemy. And that's how you create an organization or a culture of mistrust. And you look at it and like, wait, whoa, 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 whoa. We're not taking care of our own. We're not rewarding our own.
Well,
and it will in the locker room, man. It bothers the hell out of you.
But you're saying it creates this feeling of, what was the word you just used? It creates a sense of
animosity. All right.
All right. Well, what about accountability though? What about, hey, you guys have been, you know, you're members of the Dallas Cowboys. You get treated first class. Mm-hmm. You play in great facilities. You're America's team. All that.
Sure.
And what do we have to show for it? Years and years of playoff underachievement. Mm-hmm. How about you guys go out and show that you're worth a new contract? Why does it have to be, the final year of his contract, you better get something done. You're still under contract for another year.
But you
go
have,
out and earn that second contract.
You have shown it.
Have you?
Sure. You've played great. Now, winning playoff games is about team. But okay, if you're late to shuffle your feet, or you're not rewarding a guy earlier, you're not taking care of a guy that's on a rookie contract that's proven that he's one of the best in football, then what are you doing as an organization? You're basically saying, hey, man, we're going to use the rules to our advantage, and we're going to screw our players that have earned it. I mean, it's a tricky. I understand that it's tricky.
But are you among the best in football if your team underachieves constantly in the playoffs?
Parsons one of the best players in football? Without equivocation, 100%, no question, he may be the best defensive player in football.
Okay.
So, like, those are guys, to me, you want to lock up early to show the rest of your locker room, man, if you do it the right way, we are here for you. When you don't and you shuffle your feet and you're hesitant and then, you know, things get leaked. Like, I just go back to the Dak Prescott negotiation years ago. This is however many years, because it felt like it went on for 2 years, yeah. Right? And things would get leaked about Dak just turned down the highest, like, he turned down a contract to make him the highest paid quarterback in league history, and everybody was like, oh, you know. And I remember, I think it was Emmett Smith that came out and said, you know, you should use the endorsement money you make as the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm like, are you shitting me? You're kidding me, right?
Right.
No, you shouldn't. You should not give them a discount. And here's what I know. As a player and as a player's agent, you don't release information about a contract that you don't plan to sign. You don't come out and say, guess what? I'm turning down the most lucrative contract in history for a quarterback because it's not good enough for me. No, there's some loophole. There's some fake money. There's something in it that's not right. So you don't release that to the media. You know who releases that to the media? Jerry Jones and Jerry Jones's people. And so that creates an atmosphere of tension and a feeling of mistrust. And why do you do it as an organization? I'll tell you why you do it as an organization, right? Because your fan base roots for laundry. They root for the uniform. They root for the Dallas Cowboys. And so if you can put pressure on said player by making said player look like he's a greedy bastard, guess what? The fan base will turn on the player in a heartbeat.
Maybe with one player, but you're talking about three players right now. We're talking about Dak, Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb. It's not like you can sell to your fan base, hey, we've got another Micah Parsons that we're developing. We got another CeeDee Lamb down on the practice squad.
The dudes that do it right and the dudes that become one of the best at their positions, those guys, to me, it's imperative that you get those guys signed.
Then explain Jerry Jones's thinking then. Because he's been around this league a long time.
Yeah.
He's not dumb. Mm-mm. So what game is he playing here? What's his motive?
That is a great question. What is his motive? I don't want to pay players. I'm not so much about winning as I am just continuing to build my brand. Like, they haven't won anything in 29 years. They haven't even played an NFC championship in 29 years. Last Super Bowl they won was 29 years ago. I don't know, but I just know how a locker room thinks. And when you don't take care of the guys you're supposed to take care of, the guys that mean something to you, the guys that do it the right way, the guys that, you know, that are homegrown, you don't take care of those guys, dude, it just doesn't sit well. And, you know, you're not going to sit around and talk about, like, we're getting screwed and this, that, and the other. But maybe there's a reason you don't win in the playoffs. You know, maybe there's a reason that, you know, when push comes to shove and the going gets tough, maybe guys aren't as sold out to the organization as they need to be.
You could look at it the other way. Like, if I'm a player in that locker room, I'm like, wow, they're making CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, and Dak Prescott play for their supper. You know, I guess I better deliver as well. Maybe it just creates,
but
maybe nobody's necessarily happy.
Right.
There's some tension. But at least everybody's under the understanding, hey, enough's enough. We're expected to win this year.
But they have produced. And, you know, and I guess it comes down for me that when you overperform or outperform the contract, especially the rookie contract that you got, then it's time for the organization to pony up the dough. It's time for the organization to come to the table. And enough of that has happened. You know, it's not the rule, but enough of that has happened over the course of however many years since the 2011, you know, bargaining agreement happened. Enough of that has happened. The rookie wage scale happened in 2011. Enough of that has happened that a precedent has been set. And you know what the precedent is, Mike. If you don't sign a guy early, you basically say, he's probably not going to get a second contract.
Right.
And if you don't get a second contract, you know what that says? You screwed up in the draft. Now, so there's that aspect of the Dallas Cowboys. The other part of it is a lot of what you hear is, well, they didn't do anything this offseason. And so, like, for Cowboy fans or people that are bashing the Cowboys for that, I would say, you know, pump your brakes on that a little bit, because you don't know and I don't know the players they have on that roster that they've developed that may be ready to play. You know, they sit there and say, well, Tyron Smith. Well, Tyron Smith has been hurt a bunch, right? He's missed a lot of time. And you know, you hear some of those things. Like, I go back to playing with Rod Smith, a Ring of Famer in the Denver Broncos organization, one of the great players during his time. I mean, a great player.
Should be a Hall of Famer.
Should be, you know. Yep. But I'll never forget. In 1995, we had a guy by the name of Anthony Miller, was a Pro Bowl wide receiver for us. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even know who Rod Smith was. He played in a handful of games. His first catch was a touchdown catch against my former team, the Washington Redskins. Touchdown. And we won the game on that last play of the game. So, but I really didn't know who Rod Smith is. And I'll never forget in the offseason in 1996, we cut Anthony Miller. And everybody's like, ooh, gosh, we cut, you know, Pro Bowl Anthony Miller. And we're sitting in a meeting, sitting in an O-line room meeting. And our offensive line coach, Alex Gibbs, comes and talks about Rod Smith. He goes, you guys don't get to see it, but we as coaches see it every day. He absolutely kicks the ass of our defense in practice every single day. And he said this, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I guarantee you we could line up Rod Smith in the backfield and he'd rush for 1,400 yards. That's what he said. And he goes, I'm not even the least bit concerned about what we lose in Anthony Miller because we'll make it up tenfold and Rod Smith is a football player. Dude's just a football player. And he goes on to just have the most remarkable career as a wide receiver in Denver Bronco history.
Undrafted free agent. Yep.
So I think what you have to understand when it comes to free agency, and we talk about this all the time, you're paying A-plus money for B-minus players when you're talking about free agency. You hit free agency, and I was a free agent, man. Every free agent is as flawed as a drugstore diamond. Some of them have attitude issues. Some of them have, you know, they're on the downside of their career. A guy like me had injury issues, couldn't pass a physical. You know, there are issues, but there's a flaw in there.
Did you get paid A-plus money?
I got paid my
was your more like C-minus money?
Mine was thank you, cum laude money. It was just like, thank you. Like,
I'll pay you right. to play.
Like, I never negotiated a contract. Mine was not negotiation, because for negotiation, you need two suitors, right? At least two suitors. Mine was organized begging. Like, I would go, can I please have more money? And they'd say no. But no, but seriously, can I get some more money? And they go, no. But seriously, I'd like more money. And they go, no.
You're
and
Richard Gere and officer and gentleman right. standing there.
I got nowhere else to go. That's exactly how
Please.
It was.
Please.
But, you know,
Sign me.
Right, for national guys to bash the Cowboys off season. I mean, how many people have won the off season have ever been worth a squirt of piss when it comes to the playoffs? Like, we say it every year. Oh, this team won the off season. They don't win jack. So I don't know, you don't know, the national media does not know what they've developed, what they have in regards to the next group of guys that they've been working on that are ready to take over and play. I don't know, and you don't know. We'll find out, but I have no idea.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I want to circle back. Something else you said while you were talking about Micah Parsons as maybe being the best defensive player in the league right now, with the retirement of Aaron Donald and prior to that, T.J. Watt stepping away, who is the best defensive player in football right now?
That's a great question. And, you know, who's the most impactful player? I think we have this – I think we have this thought that, you know, pass rushers, the guy who gets the most sacks or the guy who gets the most interceptions is the biggest impact player or the best player. I think that if you lined up Micah Parsons on the edge full time, he'd lead the league in sacks. The fact that he's a versatile player, that he lines up middle linebacker, that he rushes the passer from there, that he rushes the passer on the edge, all the different things that he can do, his awareness, his understanding of football in general, I think that I would probably put Micah Parsons on the top of the list as best defensive player in football.
Well, I'm getting a call from Pittsburgh. They'd like to know about T.J.
Well, I'm sure.
About T.J. Watt.
Yeah, T.J. Watt is up there. You know, Nick Bosa is up there. Those guys are probably the highest paid.
How about Josh Allen, or just got paid?
Yeah, Josh Allen just got, which goes back to signing Micah Parsons. Josh Allen just got a 5-year, $150 million deal with $88 million guaranteed. Well, could you have gotten Micah Parsons had you taken care of him a week ago or 2 weeks ago?
Now you're chasing that Josh Allen.
Now you got to jump over the top of that one. So you're costing yourself, you're costing yourself more money. But all those guys are great players. The guy from the Chiefs, Chris Jones,
yeah.
Freaking animal. Great player. But again, I would tell you that, like, I was
doing... So who is it?
I think it's Micah.
Micah Parsons.
Okay. I think he's the most versatile. I think he's the best player. I think he would, if he just lined him up full time on the edge, he'd lead the league in sacks. But he does everything from all over the place. I was doing a game between Dallas and the Giants. So the Giants line up in a reduced split. So their Z receiver at the time, it was Kenny Galladay. So he's lined up in a reduced split, and they motion the back outside of him, right? So it's him in a reduced split. Here's the back. And Micah Parsons goes out with the back, right? So it's man-to-man coverage, indicator, man-to-man coverage. So what they do is they motion the back in, and he's going to run just a quick shallow cross, right? So he's going to come in a little now route, and he's basically going to pick the corner, right? And now Kenny Galladay is going to run the rail down the sideline. And so Micah Parsons follows, and you can see Micah Parsons. He sees it coming, and he's shouting at the cornerback, like, hey, man, pick. Cornerback's like, dee, right? And so here comes the back, wham, hits him right in the ear hole. Kenny Galladay goes by. Micah Parsons doesn't hesitate, just drops his hips, opens him up, flies down the sideline with Kenny Galladay, who could run, and he's 6'4" receiver. Stride for stride, gets in phase, meaning his arm is pressed against Kenny Galladay, running with him. As soon as Kenny Galladay's hands go up, he turns, goes, bep. And it's one of the most remarkable plays because...
He's making a Pro Bowl cornerback type play.
Yeah, and he's running with a wide receiver from the word go, and he sees it, and the corner doesn't see it, and so he switches responsibilities and goes down the sideline, and this is year one or two in the league. And so he does all these different things that he's asked to do. The versatility, I would venture to guess that if I had to rate the best player on defense in the National Football League right now, it would be Micah Parsons.
In the interest of full disclosure, we're a little bit burned here in Denver.
Yes.
When it comes to Russell Wilson. So keep that in mind. Our Russell Wilson commentary might be a little bit hysterical. Because it's emotional.
Right. And then, then you say something and then the Rusties get on you.
Right.
And nobody likes a Rusty.
So,
okay.
Talking to Outkick.com, Russ says this, quote, "For me to be able to go to back-to-back Super Bowls and win one of them, I think opened up a lot of doors. Now you see guys like Patrick Mahomes who won it. It's really just us so far, but there's more to come." Wilson goes on to say, "What I'd love to see is guys getting drafted early and that a lot of teams these days have black quarterbacks playing for them. It's all across the league, and it's showing how the NFL is starting to evolve, change, and break down barriers. I think one of the biggest blessings of my career so far is that I've been fortunate to be able to open up doors for others because of what others did for me." Deconstruct that a little bit.
Yeah, I'd like you to deconstruct that. I mean, is he taking credit for what, like... What, for being short? Is he taking credit for back-to-back Super Bowls? Is he taking credit for, opening up the doors to other black players?
Okay, let's take the first part.
Okay.
The Mahomes part. This is the cynic in me, the Russell Wilson cynic in me, is he's just trying to find a way to latch on to Patrick Mahomes.
Okay.
And make himself relevant in the context of Patrick Mahomes. Look at what we've done.
Right.
The only ones.
Yeah, we've. The first thing I would say is, do you have a turd in your pocket? You and your turd? Let's not jump onto the Patrick Mahomes bandwagon. That guy is as good as it gets. And oh, by the way, the Super Bowls that you went to, you had a generational defense, the Legion of Boom, that became the model in the NFL at that time. We're going back to 2013, I believe, when they won that Super Bowl. After that, every team in the league started trying to play that match cover 3 that Seattle and Pete Carroll put together. It became the standard defense in the NFL. Just like today, you know, over a decade later, now it's the Fangio, you know, shell cover four defense that's really taken hold of the league. At that point, everybody tried to copy the Seattle Seahawks defense. So you had a generational defense. You had a run game with Marshawn Lynch in beast mode, right? You didn't have a cape on. You didn't sling a team on your back and carry them to the promised land. You were along for the ride to a degree. So if we're just going to be honest about history, okay? Honest about the history of that. Let's be honest about the teams that you went to the Super Bowl with.
The other part that kind of bugs me, when he says it's all across the league and it's showing how the National Football League is starting to evolve, change, and break down barriers in regards to black quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. See, do I acknowledge that he is part of that growth? And is that commendable? Is that something to be congratulated and celebrated? Absolutely. I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. I kind of chafe at the idea that it's starting to evolve and right. change, that he is somehow, I think he is overrating and overplaying his trailblazing role in all this. And what about Doug Williams? What about?
Yeah, well, I played with Doug
Williams. You played with Doug Williams.
Doug and I are dear friends. I played with Doug Williams.
What about Doug Williams? What about
Marlon Briscoe?
Briscoe.
Here in Denver. Doug Williams.
Randall Cunningham.
Warren Moon.
Donovan McNabb.
Warren Moon was I mean, he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. He's one of the greatest that's ever played the
Correct.
Game.
Michael Vick, Cam Newton, you know, all these quarterbacks right. that they were
Steve McNair.
Steve
did you
McNair.
Mention?
Right. I'd argue they are just as prominent and that they started this movement.
They're a lot more prominent than Russell because the movement had started long before Russell.
Correct.
I mean, the movement started when Russell was in diapers.
So do I acknowledge that Russ is part of it? Absolutely. Don't mistake me. But there's, I think he's over exaggerating his trailblazing role in all of this, and he's kind of conveniently leaving a lot of people. I know he made mention of because of what others did for me, but I just, it's the whole bit about it starting to evolve and change, and thanks to me.
Unless he's talking about short quarterbacks, he's a trailblazer because guys like, you know, Kyler Murray and other short guys got opportunities. I'd much rather hear you. Here's the problem. If you've been in Seattle or you've been here in Denver for the last 2 years, you've listened to this robotic, you know, soundbite that never deals or doesn't feel like he ever deals in authenticity. And for me, one time, I'd like to hear, yeah, you know what? I really sucked. And I really need to get better. But there's this, you know, I call it toxic positivity that surrounds him and his people. And I just know this about myself. Man, I got buddies, yourself included, but I got all my college buddies that if I get off the rails a little bit, will call me on my bullshit. I have a wife that will call me on my bullshit, right? Like, you need to put people in your circle that will hold you accountable. And I've told you, man, I've sat down with him in a meeting and asked him. I said, hey, man, you said you had to be better. I showed him the article. You said you had to be better. What do you have to do better? He goes, hey, you know what? When we're down in the red zone, we have to score. And I go, no. It's not what I asked you. I asked you what you have to do better. Well, you know, as an offense, stop right there. No, it's not, again, not what I, what do you need to do? Couldn't answer the question.
Yeah.
Wouldn't answer the question. Won't admit, you know, and that stuff drives me crazy because I think Russell, deep down inside, is a really good dude. But you have to, my opinion, in my experience in the NFL, man, especially as a quarterback, you have to deflect 100% of the accolades that come your way when you win. You've got to deflect and defer to your teammates. And then when you lose, you have to take 100% of the barbs that come your way. And if you don't do that, there's a lack of respect for you. And the lack of authenticity is killing him right now. Just killing him. And that is just, it just sounds, that sounds disingenuous. And it just.
Sounds self-promotional.
It does. And there's a lack of understanding the history of the league right there. And that's disappointing. That's all. Just disappointing.
Ray, get some questions from great viewers out there. Here you go. This is from David Kramer. Actually, I want to finish. Let's do this one because this one's good. This one's deep.
Okay.
This might be the most profound thing we've talked about on this show.
Okay. Great.
You ready for it?
Yeah, I am.
Because you and profound don't always go together.
No.
Fans can't seem to understand what a championship means to an athlete, but Mark, can an athlete truly understand what a championship means to fans?
Mm. Ooh. What a championship means to the fans in the city.
Yeah.
You know, as a player, I don't think you really understand it. Your focus is so myopic on the task at hand that you really live in, you know, with these horse blinders on. And you don't think about what it means to the fans because you're so busy chasing a championship for your team. And so I don't think you really have that understanding of what fans, the investment they make. You just don't. I didn't. And you know, they live and breathe and die with every win and every loss. You don't as a player. It hurts. Losing hurts. But you move on, you play the next game, and you try to, you know, and there's so many, hey, man, I'm trying to stay healthy enough, and I'm trying to rehab this knee, and I'm trying to play at a high level. And you don't have that. And oftentimes you just don't have the history. Hey, I wasn't here for the losses. So, you know, like Sean Payton said, hey, my hump. Like, you don't have that. But I'll tell you where you start to understand it, when you're done and you've retired. And one of the things that happened to me when I decided to hang it up and retire, I started getting reflective. And one of the big things that I realized, and I kind of broke down, I was up in Alaska, and I was getting honored, and, you know, and jersey retired or whatever it was, right? Key to the city, I don't know. But I started talking about kind of my career and thanking my parents and my wife and my kids. And I was so, again, myopic in what I was doing, so tunnel vision in what I had to do, that I started thinking about, while I was talking, what I put my parents through, what I put my wife through. I had 29 surgeries. I was beat to a pulp. I was in a hospital, you know, I was playing on Sunday, limping to a hospital room Monday morning, having surgery, and being back on the field on Sunday. And, you know, and didn't ever think about what they were thinking. Didn't ever think about, you know, being on the field and getting hurt and having my mom and dad watching. Never crossed my mind. And so you start to think and reflect on those things after retirement. You're like, oh, shoot, man. And you start thinking about, like, even to this day, how many people, when I'm out and about in Denver, will come to me and go, dude, I'll tell you where I was. I was, you know, I was 9 years old, and I was watching with my dad, and he was a diehard Bronco fan. And it was like, you know, it was his dying wish for you guys to win something. When you guys won, it was the happiest I'd ever seen. Like they're telling you their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, whoa. Like, I didn't really think about it as a player.
I think end of the day, you know, for us as fans, it's a passion. End of the day for you guys, it's a job.
Yeah, it's a job. You're always passionate about playing football, right? It's, as I say, there's a line from one of my favorite bands, The Alarm. It's the lifeblood that courses through my veins. But at the same time, I don't have that same connection, that same history with that city, you know? And so I don't, but I've grown to respect it and to understand it and to really, you know, to really embrace it.
One more question that comes in. Mark, what is the most underrated position in football today?
I'm going to say probably tight end.
Hmm.
And I think
underrated.
It's underrated. It's underrated from the fact that I don't think most people understand how difficult and the level of comprehension that you have to have. So you have to have the understanding of protection and offensive line play and run scheme and you know and protection schemes, right? You got to be able to do that. You got to be able to understand that sometimes you're the Y, sometimes you're the F, sometimes the F can be a backside tight end, but sometimes the F can be split out and be, you know, actually you're playing more of a receiver role, right? And that's the guy that's going to shift and motion and change strengths and do all those things. So I think next to the quarterback, Mike, there's probably more responsibility from a knowledge standpoint at the tight end position in the National Football League right now than any other position. And so you've got to be full-time blocker, full-time pass catcher. You know, you've got to play almost like a quarterback in some to some degree. So I think that's probably one of the most undervalued or misunderstood positions in football.
Sounds like what I'm hearing is that besides the quarterback, tight ends are the second most intelligent players on the football team.
They have the second most responsibility.
That's what I heard.
They're the third smartest players on the football team.
Behind?
Well, O-line, then this a notch below QB.
This guy.
QB, and then it goes tight. Oh, yeah, it's the QB. Okay, if the guy plays down, throw it over his head. If the guy plays deep, throw it under. Oh, it's so hard. You guys couldn't understand it. Give me a break. I'm so sick of you.
Sometimes, folks, it's too easy. I hate quarterbacks.
Hey, for everybody involved in the Stink Truth Podcast, we appreciate you guys for watching. Thank you so much for subscribing and continue to do that for us. We appreciate that. We'll be back with you guys next week.